back to SEWCT. I'm Chef T, your host, and I have some news for you guys. I have four articles that I found that I wanted to share with you guys. One of them, I wanted to catch up on some of the cannabis news as well, so I'm going to cover some news I missed to share with you guys in case you missed it as well. So starting with Bernie Sanders celebrates his home state's new marijuana legalization law. I'm going to move on to addiction education and the future of cannabis policy. From there, I'm going to head into sensory scientists encourage smell checks to fight COVID-19 spread. And lastly, found on BBC.com, COVID virus survived for 28 days in lab conditions. So actually, let's kind of dive into some of this COVID stuff. Then we'll finish off with the cannabis talk. So COVID virus survives for 28 days in lab conditions. This is really interesting because apparently on your surface and on your surface, it can last up to like 18 to 24 hours or something like that. So now they're saying survives for 28 days. So let's tune into this. The virus responsible for COVID-19 can remain infectious on surfaces such as banknotes, phone screens, and stainless steel for 28 days, researchers say. The finding from Australia's National Science Agency suggests SARS-CoV-2 can survive for far longer than thought. However, the experiment was conducted in the dark. UV light has already been shown to kill the virus. Some experts have also thrown doubt on the actual threat posed by surface transmission in real life. The coronavirus is mostly transmitted when people cough, sneeze, or even talk. But there is also evidence that it can also be spread by particles hanging in the air. It is also possible someone could get COVID-19 by touching affected surfaces, such as metal or plastic, according to the U.S. Centers of Disease Control. This is believed to be much less common, however. So what exactly does this study say? Previous laboratory tests have found that SARS-CoV-2 can survive 2 to 3 days on banknotes and glass, and up to 6 days on plastic and stainless steel, although results vary. However, the research from Australian agency CSIRO found the virus was extremely robust, surviving for 28 days on smooth surfaces such as glass found on mobile phone screens and both plastic and paper black banknotes. When kept at 200 Celsius, basically 68 degrees, which I said 200? Did I say 200 Celsius? 20 Celsius, excuse me, which is 68 degrees Fahrenheit, which is about room temperature and in the dark. So in comparisons, the flu virus can survive in the same circumstances for 17 days. The study published in Virology Journal also found that SARS-CoV-2 survived less time at hotter temperatures than cooler temperatures. It stopped being infectious between 24 hours at 40 Celsius on some surfaces. It also stayed longer on smooth, non-porous surfaces than on porous materials such as cloth, which was found not to carry any infectious virus past 14 days. So what are basically the disagreements about? So Professor Ron Ellis, former director of Common Cold Century at Cardiff University, criticized the study and said that suggesting that the virus could survive for 28 days was causing unnecessary fear in the public. Viruses are spread on surfaces from mucus and coughs and sneezes and dirty fingers, and this study did not use fresh human mucus as a vehicle to spread the virus, he said. Fresh mucus is a hostile environment for viruses, as it contains lots of white cells that produce enzymes to destroy viruses and can also obtain antibodies and other chemicals to basically neutralize the virus. In his opinion, infectious viruses will also persist for hours in mucus on surfaces rather than days. In a paper published by Lancet in July, Emmanuel Goldman, professor of microbiology at Rutgers University, said the chance of transmission through surfaces is very small. So he said the study that suggested a significant risk had been designed with little resemblance to real life scenarios. Last week, Monica Gonhai, a professor of medicine in the University of California, said the coronavirus did not spread via surfaces. So there's a bunch of other stuff to get into here. Study highlights needs to clean hands and touch screens. Most important takeaway is clean your hands, don't touch your face, clean your hands, don't touch your face, and social distance, wear your mask. Just follow the guidelines that you've been hearing over and over and over and over again to stop the spread of this particular virus. And actually, if you wear your mask, you're probably stopping the spread of the flu virus as well. And if you got your flu shot as well. Moving on to the next story, guys. Again, I'm gonna have the links in the podcast description, video description as well. So feel free to click those links if you want to read further. So I'm gonna move on to medicalexpress.com. Sensory scientists encourage smell checks to fight COVID-19 spread. I think this is a great idea. You know, periodically, you know, make sure you're smelling what you're eating. And if you are not able to smell it, you know, that may, I'm not saying it is, maybe, you know, some sort of warning sign that you want to just pay attention to. So just pay attention to those signs so that you can mitigate any, you know, spread or necessary, or just, you know, make the wise decision on what you need to do to stay safe and you keep your loved ones safe as well. So with mounting scientific evidence that basically the loss of smell is one of the most specific symptoms of COVID-19 infection, sensory scientists in Penn State's College of Agricultural Science have launched a webpage to encourage people to perform a daily smell test in an effort to help nip disease spread. In many COVID-19 cases worldwide, patients have reported an abrupt and unexplained loss of smell and taste, sometimes in the absence of or before other symptoms such as fever, dry cough, shortness of breath is what I was actually heading to. Aches and fatigue, said John Hayes, professor of food science and director of Penn State Sensory Evaluation Center. A growing body of research suggests that half to three quarters of the people who become infected lost their sense of smell, either partially or completely, he said. Checking for sudden smell loss should help identify otherwise, so allowing them to self-isolate or consult a medical professional about testing would be pretty much, you know, your next options. Hayes explained that researchers have found that certain cells at the top of your nasal cavity harbor proteins that the coronavirus targets when invading these cells, the local disruption that occurs is different from the loss of smell that occurs with the common cold, which is due to blockage of the nasal passage. With COVID-19, many patients lose the ability to smell without being stuffy or congested. To raise awareness of these particular COVID-19 symptoms, Hayes and colleagues, staff sensory scientists in the Department of Food Science, spearheaded development of the Stop Smell Be Well webpage. So, which urges paid visitors to make smell checks part of their daily routine. The page suggests that people can use their morning coffee, food, flowers, perfume, shampoo, deodorant, or any other familiar aroma to monitor their ability to smell. The page lists other symptoms associated with COVID-19, provides links to other Penn State resources, and points readers to related news stories. Visitors also can learn about the science behind how the virus attacks the sense of smell. I'm gonna leave this link in the bio description, guys. You guys can read further. There's a little bit more information to get into. some pretty good information here, I think, in terms of just, you know, part of being safe, right? So let's move on to this article here. Bernie Sanders celebrates his home state's new marijuana legalization law. This article was about 3 days ago, so definitely missed some of this information here. So I'm catching up, and hopefully as I catch up, I'm helping you to catch up as well. So Bernie Sanders tweeted out on October 9th, he said, "Let me congratulate the state legislature for making Vermont the 17th state in the country to legalize marijuana and also for expunging past marijuana convictions." Pretty cool. "Now it is time for Congress and the federal government to end the war on drugs and legalize marijuana nationwide." So this article just kind of gets deep into it. I'm not going to read the whole thing here. Actually, it's pretty short. Maybe I'll get through it. I'll breeze through it. Let's see how I feel along the way. But this is great news. I can't wait to see all states pretty much just legalize this amazing plant. Yeah. I've said a lot about it, so I'm not going to get into it in this podcast, and I'm sure you guys feel the same way. So Bernie Sanders is happy that legal marijuana sales are coming to his home state. I already read that. Vermont Governor Phil Scott announced this week that he would allow a bill to legalize cannabis sales to become law without his signature, while he signed a separate legislation to facilitate the expungement of past marijuana convictions. "Now is the time for Congress and federal government to end the war on drugs and legalize marijuana nationwide." And that's what Sanders said. Sanders, during his run for Democratic presidential nomination this year, Sanders pledged to legalize marijuana in all 50 states on his first day in office, a prospect that some legal experts met with skepticism. After Sanders conceded the nomination to former Vice President Joe Biden, both former rivals formed a criminal justice task force that convened earlier this year and issued various recommendations on policies they feel should be adopted. Advocates hope that the panel would push the former vice president to back legalization with the support of the Sanders appointees, but it did not, and Biden remains opposed to the broader policy change despite supermajority Democratic support for the reform. The Democratic nominee instead supports decriminalizing cannabis possession and expunging past records, modest federal rescheduling, legalizing medical marijuana, and letting states set their own policies. The Democratic National Committee's platform committee also rejected an amendment to make legalization in 2020 party plank. Some suspect this was because they didn't want to endorse a policy that's at odds with that of the nominee. Also on Friday, Sanders tweeted static about the marijuana arrests in the U.S. There's a bunch of stuff that he's talking about here you can also read. So this is really cool stuff, guys. There's no indication that Sanders will be taking advantage of the Vermont's new cannabis law when legal sales come online, which is expected in 2022. The senator previously said that he smoked marijuana decades ago, but that the plant didn't do much for him. So in his own words, you can read it. "Vermont legalized low-level possession and home cultivation," which is so cool. I would love to grow at home here, "of cultivation of marijuana back in 2018, but has not had a way for consumers to legally purchase cannabis. That will change under the new law." Great stuff, guys. Looks like we're heading in the right direction with the cannabis movement. And lastly here, I am going to be talking about addiction, education, and the future of cannabis policy. So Dr. Peter Grinspoon is a primary care physician and an instructor at Harvard Medical School and a contributing editor to Harvard Health Publication. In his capacity as a specialist authority on addiction and medical cannabis, he has served as an expert witness, medical, and scientific advisor and consultant. He's currently a board member of the International Nonprofit Doctors of Cannabis Regulation. So medical cannabis is helping to ease the current opioid crisis in a number of ways. First of all, it is a valuable alternative to opioids for the treatment of chronic pain. Medical cannabis is eventually not as effective as opioids for acute pain, for instance, post-surgery or for broken bone. But it is certainly beneficial for chronic pain in America. For example, millions of people are experiencing chronic pain as they become more rotund and develop higher rates of knee arthritis and back pain. Non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, also NSAIDs, are dangerous. They can damage the kidneys and the heart, and they can cause ulcers. So study after study has found that in regions where cannabis has been legalized, either for medical or adult use, opioid prescriptions have gone down. He personally have had countless patients who have switched from opioids to medical cannabis for pain control. So cannabis-based treatment helps people who are using opioids for chronic pain and want to stop. And it is a great option for new patients presenting with chronic pain. They often offer new chronic pain patients cannabis instead of opioids, because opioid-based treatment results in a very dreary lifestyle. You have to get drug tested, you have to sign these opioid contracts, you're very constipated. It's just a much better lifestyle to be on cannabis than to be on a chronic opioid therapy. Additionally, for patients who are already addicted to opioids, cannabis can really help them with the withdrawal symptoms. There is some evidence that using medical cannabis can help keep people in treatment for opioid use disorder. It has had similar results to I'm definitely butchering the name there. Sorry. And some studies indicating higher retention in treatment for cannabis than others. So cannabis can be very helpful both as a substitute for opioid in treating chronic pain and as an adjunct for medication-assisted treatment for opioid dependence. So it looks like it's good for taking people off of opioid or working alongside of them as they take them off. So there's a lot of great things on how cannabis can really play out and help an individual. And just, you know, chronic pain in general, there's many people out there that are suffering from chronic pain. And if cannabis can be sort of their tool, I'm not gonna say complete answer. I don't know the situation you're dealing with, but at least a healthy tool from nature that can help ease whatever tension, chronic pain that you're dealing with so that you can create that balance in your life and you can start to feel better. And when that starts to happen, wow, you just start to enjoy life all over again, right? You start to be creative. You start to, you know, venture out. You start to do things. And that's really important for your lifestyle. So I'm a huge advocate for cannabis, if you don't know that already. So I am all for it, especially as a cancer survivor. I think it's great. I think it's very helpful in terms of dealing with any forms of PTSD, stress, even from this pandemic. You know, there's going to be people come out of this pandemic with just post-traumatic stress disorder, you know, just the fear of any sort of virus or, you know, bacteria. So it's definitely helpful. So this is actually a really great article, guys. Very lengthy. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I felt like just touching on some of those opioid points would be really, really keen and great to highlight for you guys. I was going to leave the podcast in the description. Well, I'm coming to the end of this podcast. I'm done. So I'm going to leave the link in the podcast description for all of you guys. So please feel free to click all the links, read further. Just don't believe what I'm reading and sharing with you guys. You guys should definitely do your part. Click those links, read further. And if there's something wrong within these articles that I read, please share it with me. I would love to learn more and love to correct whatever it is that needs to be correct, if anything. Guys, always remember, stay healthy, be safe out there. Fall and winter is here. Definitely stay safe. Especially if we're still dealing with this pandemic. Catch you guys in the next one. I'm Chef T. Peace out.
Oh, thank you.